Sometimes we forget about that. We forget about the power and the strength of God. We'll talk about it much anymore. Now, back in the day, they did. Now, you don't know expressions? Back in the day. Yeah, back in the day. That's exactly the point. It's a fairly new expression. But I seem to use it a lot anymore. I like it. You know why I like it? Because. How's that for a great answer? My very first semester in college in biology class had a final exam. And it had been a survey course talking about development, life, all that kind of stuff. You know what Blue Books are? Remember Blue Books? Little like notebooks at 16 or 32 pages in, you write exams in. Remember those? We were told to bring like 3 16-page Blue Books to the exam. The professor said, "This is the exam." It writes up on the board and says, "Why?" He wanted people to spit out everything they learned over the semester. I put "because" in terms of my paper. I got an A. But why a "because"? It's great. It reminds me of talking to a three-year-old. "How come, Mom?" "Because." When it gets real bad, it's "because I did so." I'll tell you why I like it, though. What? Why? Okay. I'm always in trouble for saying why. Back in the day, it's a phrase that people use to talk about the past, especially when they're happy with it, they're sentimental about it. Not necessarily, though. Like the 65-year-old lady who was at the grocery store goes to check out, doesn't have a returnable bag. And the young girl checking her out said, "Well, you should bring those returnable bags, you know. It's the green thing." I guess you didn't have the green thing back in the day. So the old lady, 65, she was older than her, the old lady says, "No, but we got milk in bottles that went back to the dairy. And we got soda and beer in bottles we paid deposits for, so we went back to the store. And we got meat from the butcher wrapped in paper and tied with string, and not plastic and styrofoam. And you know what? We made kites out of that string and that paper. But you're right. We didn't have the green thing back in the day." But back in the day, I like it because the exact period is not specified. Could be a couple days ago. Could be a few years ago, decades ago. It depends on. Could even be really long, you know, back in the day when Rome was in charge of everything. You know, really. It depends on the context and the speaker's effectiveness. I got curious about it. When do you think this phrase was invented? I figured it was going to be, you know, back in, well, in 1532, so. No. 1973. A guy named Earl Caldwell, who's a journalist writing for the New York Times, and he interviewed a Black Panther guy. Remember Black Panther? A guy named was Bobby Seale. But he said, "Back in our days, every brother on this block was solid." Meaning, of course, that they were staunchly in favor of Black Panther. Well, it wasn't quite the same, because back in our days, well, that's what Panther. Language changes. Back in the day. Now, back in the day, I dealt a lot with statistics. Anybody here deal with statistics? Andrea's favorite subject in school. Andrea hated statistics. I dealt with them a lot, and I really don't like statistics because the way I look at it, statistics is often a fancy way to lie. Look at poll numbers and things. Can't do it a lot. I had a researcher I was working with once that I refused to be an author on his paper because he went and did 5 experiments. They sat down and started pulling out statistical tests, trying to run through his study to get something that said it was real. He didn't like one of the results. They threw it out and did another one in place. His results were crap. I refused to be associated with him because he was lying. Now, in statistics, there's something called a confidence interval. We just read something about confidence here. And confidence interval in statistics. If you ever see a chart and it's got a point on it and it's got a line that goes up and down, maybe from a standard error bar or maybe a standard deviation bar, depending on what it is. But it's all based on confidence interval. And what that is the idea of rather than just giving a single point, you give the single point, say the average, plus, by formulation, a range where it falls. Not saying absolute. If I said, this is a red hymnal, y'all are going to agree with me, right? Not the same red as Pat's wearing. Pat's wearing a red shirt. Okay, right? So these two articles are red, but they're not a point. In fact, that's a confidence interval. And you deal with those a lot. And we usually specified 95%, which meant you had to be 95% certain that something was different before you could report. Like if I gave you a drug to help something and I did 100 people and 95 responded positively, that shows a pretty good indication it's going to work, right? 95% confidence. Fills out the population error. But it's a true parameter. It's not saying, though, a probability of 95% that something's going to happen. There's a 30% possibility of rain today. What's that mean? Most people think it can, you know, maybe 30% of the time. I figure if there's 30% possibility of rain, it means 30% of the people get rain on. The rest of them probably going to be dry, the way the weather forecast would go. Again, that's statistics. I said it could be a fancy way to lie. You make it mean what you want to. Again, look at political polls. Number crunch. Don't really like it, but that's our world. Now, you get to what we just read in Psalm 118. The psalmist doesn't say, well, 90% of the time. Well, that's not good. We got to throw that out. Try some more. No. He talks about faithfulness and obedience. That's what I've been talking about lately. And he says, God's steadfast love endures till Thursday week. Forever and ever. God's steadfast love endures forever. And not 95% of the time. 100%. There's a very big difference in how Muslims perceive God, Allah, which, by the way, is the Arabic word for God. So you're talking to an Arabic speaking Christian, they say Allah, they don't mean Muslims Allah, they mean our God. But when Muslims look at Allah, they don't know what to expect. If you are part of the body of Christ, nothing's going to change that. And you know how God is going to treat you. You can stand before Allah, from Muslim perspective, and be absolutely the best Muslim possible since Muhammad. And Allah might say, I got toothache today. Go to hell with you. Allah is the future. God isn't. God endures forever. I'm not picking on the Muslims particularly in this case. I'm not slamming them. That is what their book says. You want to be in trust with a guy like that? The psalmist also writes back in the day, it is better to take refuge in the Lord than to put confidence in princes, or statistics, or Islamic heritage. I would much, much rather trust God than statistics. when we first moved here, one of the things that we noticed is most of the houses right here had shingles on their roof.
And we said,
we grew up, you had tar and gravel roofs that were almost flat or flat. You had flat cement tile roofs. You had clay barrel tile roofs. 95% of the time, think about statistics, I'm making this up, but here and there you'd find a house with shingles. So we're baffled by this. We don't have hurricanes here. Hadn't had a hurricane in 44 years. We were here 6 months and we had a hurricane. Called Charlie. Statistics. Can't see a way to lie, and you cannot rely upon it. You can have some confidence, but not absolute. When I started thinking about this, so what does it mean for life in general? Now, I am not afraid of anything. You can startle me. Andrew does to me all the time. Without meaning to, she says something, I hit the ceiling. Because I'm either thinking about something or absolutely not paying attention, and just there, right? You can startle me, but you can't make me afraid. Nothing the world can throw at me will make me afraid. You know why? Because God's steadfast love endures forever. And I have confidence. Thomas also says, with the Lord on my side, I do not fear. What can man do? With the Lord on my side, I do not fear, because what can man do to me? And I realize that, but you all understood the words I just said, but don't you? You know what it means by saying God is on my side? You know often that phrase has been twisted and turned and made rotten? How many times in war, Civil War, North and South, North said, no man should be enslaved. South said, it is our right to enslave those not human black people. God is on our side. He approves slavery. It's in the Bible. North said, God is on our side. God abhors slavery. It's in the Bible. God is on our side. Who is right? Us or the other guys? Hard to say something. And you do realize that history is always written by the winner. In every historical text, about anything, there's always going to be bias. But with the Lord on my side, I do not fear. That's the more important aspect of that verse. Because what can man do? Fine, they can kill me. As the words of the hymn say, kill my body, but not my soul. If you belong to God, the worst thing is to kill. Yeah, I got prison. I know I tell a lot of prison stories, but we had so much ministry happen, so much stuff occurred in 4 years that here. When I first went to work in the prison, people said, aren't you afraid you might get killed? And I look at these people and say, no, I'll take the promotion. And that's usually the answer I got too, was dead silence. Or, huh? If you're a Christian, what's the worst they can do to you? They ain't kill you. My only concern ever was if I got wound up on the other side of the grass. Huh. But I do not fear. God's love endures forever. I'll take the promotion. I'm not going to look for it. I'm not going to try to make myself a martyr. But I am confident. No fear. I don't worry either. Neither. You don't believe me, man, first, because it's right. Right? I don't fear, I don't worry. Hard, right? Well, maybe at first. When you realize that, that God really is on your side. Not necessarily in a crusade from the north to the south or the other way to the north. Not even going over to Europe for World War II and trying to get rid of the Nazis. When you realize that God is on your side, it gets to be easy. Really. When you really accept it, it becomes dangerous. It does become dangerous in very different ways, depending on where you are, who you are, your context. It can be different, but the more that you hold on to the enduring love of God, the more you become confident in your faith. Again, when you're in prison, the guys that were Christians and lived as much as Christians as they could, and people knew they were Christians, a lot of people claimed to be, but they wouldn't tell anybody, they caught it all the time. The Muslims didn't because there were too many of them, and they were nasty, they didn't get back at them. But the guys who were Christians in prison had problems all the time because of who they are. When you try to live in faith and obedience to God, living out life so that people know who and what you are, not, I am a Christian. See that? I am a Christian. You need to pay attention. You need to know that. You need to pay attention. I am a Christian. Have we all said that? Simple. Because what can man do to listen to? Be yourself, right? Now, when most people say in our culture today, be yourself, they're talking about, well, do whatever you want to do. That's not what I mean. When I say be yourself, be your Christian self. Be the person that belongs to God. Be the person who is faithful and obedient. Because what can man do to you? What can woman do to you? What can people who don't know do to you? You're going to lose lots of battles, but I read the last page. God wins. It doesn't matter. I don't care. The world today, especially here in the West, really, been here in the U.S. all day, you hear things like, you're not the boss of me. Don't tell me what to do. You can't judge me. It says in the Bible, judge not. That whole judging thing and telling people what to do is our sin. What Jesus says in Matthew is this: judge not that you not be judged except by the judgment that you pronounce. And knowing that the measure you give is the measure. But be prepared to be measured by that same stick. We have judgments every day, all the time. This is heavy. That's not. This is good. That's not. I like this. I don't like that. We are not allowed to judge a person's worth before God. We are allowed to judge somebody's character, their actions, what they do, who they are. But we're not allowed to say, well, hat, God doesn't love you just because you wear an ugly hat. I like that. Now, if I did say something like that, I guess, well, I got to be prepared to be judged by the ugly hat that I wear. Jesus says, don't be a hypocrite. Call a spade and a shovel a shovel. Make sure that you're willing to be called by the same token. It's hard to live that way in faith and obedience and love. Because Jesus didn't give us an easy job when he left. We, I mean literally we, us, here in this room and in this town and country, we don't have it that bad, really. After all, what are people going to do to us as Christians? Yeah, fun. We have the occasional wacko that will walk into a church door and blow people away. Or synagogue. Yeah. You have planes that fall out of die into towers on occasion. That wasn't a Christian thing, though. But here, really, what can happen to us to be living our lives out here we're basically physically safe. It puts you in danger if you truly believe and live as we should live. I'm in that category too. Living in faith and obedience and love, it puts you in danger of having, negative consequences accrue against you in terms of whom we live with, for, through, around, etc. You read stories about the woman who refuses to take the cross off, but they fire her at work. That's living in faith of the deed. As far as she is concerned, nowhere in Scripture it says you walk around with the cross on right now. But if her belief is such that she needs to represent herself by that cross, and that's a deeply held faithful conviction, and she says no, fired. That's a conscience. They're not going to put her on the rack. They're not going to throw her in jail. If you witness to family and friends and they kick you out and, you know, they disown you. And if people take advantage of you and let them, you take advantage of other people. It's hard until you get to the point where you don't care. Because of those consequences, the last word on this, it's another word, I just love him, but faith and obedience is hard. But the hardest one of all may be commitment. Because to live a life in faith and obedience and love, you need to keep your commitment. And we get distracted all the time. And I'm not just talking about distracted from church life, I'm talking about or, Andrea, I got to go grab a drink out of the refrigerator. The garage. Well, that means it's a delay. Oh, I forgot to glue that. Hour later, where am I? Still drinkless. Sitting in my chair reading by this time, right? We get distracted. That's a little issue, but that's... Usually it lasts more than an hour. That was the day. But that's nonsense. I mean, that's just simple, stupid stuff in life. How about, you know, our Christian life is even easier. We get distracted all the time from the narrow way because we're afraid sticking to it because of time. And the broad, wide, easy highway is so tempting. Our obedience gets cracked through temptation. Our faith may not falter, may not shatter, but God gets put on the back burner. I've said for years, okay, people, soul closet's over there. Don't forget to hang up your soul till you leave, and then when you come back next Sunday, you can pick it up and put it on again. So many people act differently inside the walls of the church than they do on the outside. And you couldn't tell. You know, coming to church on Sunday is a habit. It's a habit. You have to get into the habit. And it's a very hard habit to develop. And it's a very easy habit to break. Oh, okay, it's a big event today. It's a Super Bowl, so I better stay home from church to make sure I get everything right. Oh, we got friends from up north staying with us. We're going to skip church so we can go to the beach, and they don't go to church anymore. I'm tired. Throw a couple of those excuses in a row. Guess what? You don't go to church anymore. Boy, rarely. This is just me. I'm not picking on people not coming to church. I am, but I'm not. It's not just that. That's what happens in our life. We lose our commitment. And what's the answer? Why does that happen? An easy, quick, simple answer that nobody wants to use the word anymore is sin. Because we are all sinners, we all fall for the glory of God, and all around us is temptation. church example. That's just one example. You can pick one. Whatever you want to take it away. Even back in the day, it was like, it's always been. People say, well, back in the day, you build it and they will come. Y'all remember the 50s and 60s when the churches were full? And the churches were full because there'd be all these GIs coming back from the war, thankful to be alive. God, get me out of this hole, I'll go to church every Sunday, I promise. And some of those people stuck to that. That short period in American history when the churches were full and you build, they will come, was an aberration in churches. Almost always, it's been the church against the world. But we can persevere and conquer in faith and obedience and commitment. I'm certain of that. It's like this little group. By this time next year, we can have 100 people. I am not certain that we will, but we could. Can you hear that, Jerry? We could. But the way we do that is by living our lives in faith and obedience and commitment. As it's written, the Lord is on my side to help me. And it might not always show up and be obvious because, like I said, we lose battles, but we win the war. And people are going to hate you. Last thing the psalmist says, I'm going to mention is he says, I look in triumph on those who hate me. Who cares? God cares. Do you have I care about what this person thinks of me list? I mean, there are some people you don't care. And there are some people who do care. I have a very, very short list. I care about what she thinks about me. Sometimes I care about what my son thinks about me. That's it. I mean, do I care if Pat likes me? Sure. Do I care? Wait, Brandon thinks about me? Sure. If after the service day, Fran walks up to me and says, I hate your ugly, stinking guts, you go to hell. Well, guess what? That would not make me happy. Is that going to kill me or hurt me? No. Yeah, it would hurt me. It would hurt me. I do have feelings. You know, but it's not going to kill me. Because in that kind of a scheme of things, she doesn't matter. She matters. God matters. Very short list. As long as God always comes first, and he does, and it's God and him, you can do the job. You can be faithful, you can be obedient, and you can be committed, but it's hard work. The thankless job, the hard job, the dirty job, but first, you'll go. But the retirement benefits are out of this one. Language changes to God. Let us confess our faith together.